since Dad died, but now that Elliot was back, the thought of him leaving again made my chest ache. Sorry.
You're forgiven.
I pointed behind me. I should probably head home. I have something in the oven. Just let me have a few more minutes, please. I glanced down the street toward the juniper.
Catherine,
I'm really okay. Some days are just harder than others. Elliot reached for my hand, sliding his fingers between mine.
I have bad days too, Catherine. But I don't run out of my house because I'm afraid of what's inside.
I didn't have an answer, so I let go of his hand and left him alone in the park.
Chapter 10. Elliot.
Knock that shit off, young blood,
Coach Peckham said, pulling me up from the grass. I stood, nodding. He grabbed my face mask.
I know you're famous for sneaks, but I don't need you injured by your own team before the first damn game.
Sorry, Coach, I said. It was my second head-on collision of the day. I was already in trouble for being late to practice. Coach ran me half to death in the heat, but it was exactly what I needed to burn off the anger boiling inside of me. It was easier to run the ball than try to remember plays when Catherine was dominating my thoughts. So I just took the ball and ran straight for the end zone. We stood around listening to the coaches before we were released from practice. The managers ran onto the field, handing out bottles of water. When they released us, it didn't take long for my teammates to gather around me, slapping my ass, shoulders, and the back of my head. They were whooping and hollering as we entered the locker room, excited for the upcoming season, now that they had a 5A quarterback on the team.
Not that we're not happy about it, but why did you say you moved here your senior year?
Connor Daniels asked. He was a fellow senior, loved to talk about what girl he was banging and how much he'd drunk the weekend before. He reminded me of a lot of the guys I played with in UConn, as if sex and drinking were the only things to do or worth talking about. Or maybe he was trying to overcompensate for something. Either way, he annoyed me.
Are you military or something?
Scotty Neal asked. I'd beat him out of the quarterback spot, and even though he tried to pretend to be pissed off, I could tell he was relieved.
For a girl, I said, proud.
My teammates laughed.
Shut the hell up, young blood. You're full of shit,
Connor said. When I didn't waver, his eyes grew wide.
Wait, you're serious? Which one?
Catherine Calhoun, I said. Scotty wrinkled his nose.
Catherine? What the fuck, dude? She is kinda hot, Connor said.
I glowered at him, and he backed away.
It was a compliment.
We live in the same neighborhood. I've been visiting here in the summer since I was a kid.
Damn, Scotty said. You know she's crazy, right?
She's not crazy, I said, my tone final. She's just been through a lot.
Someone should warn you, Scotty said. Their whole family is bad news. I mean, generations of bad. They poisoned the whole town. Then they went bankrupt. The dad died. And the mom is a freaking weirdo. Catherine, you could get a scholarship, maybe even go pro. You should steer clear of her.
Say that again, I said, taking a step toward him. Scotty leaned back.
Okay, man. I'm just trying to warn you.
The rest of the team followed him and Connor to the showers, and I grabbed my bag, threw the strap over my head, and headed out of the locker room, still steaming. Someone grabbed my arm as I rounded the corner, and I yanked my arm away.
Hey, whoa, Coach Peckham said. Good practice today, Elliot.
Thanks, Coach.
I heard what Scotty said in there. He's not wrong. That family? You just need to be careful, okay?
I frowned at him. We were the same height, making it easy to meet his gaze, letting him know no one was going to change my mind about Catherine.
You don't know her like I do. You said your neighbors?
I realized my shoulders were tense, and I let them relax.
Because of my size, I had to pay more attention to my body language. I'd gotten in too many fights the past 2 years because it looked like I was threatening someone. And the last thing I needed was for my coach to think I was trying to intimidate him. She lives down the street from me. He nodded, thinking about that for a moment. Hi, a woman's voice said from the shadows. Mrs. Mason stepped out, looking embarrassed. You're not going to believe this. I lock my keys and my phone in my car. Coach Peckham smiled, his demeanor instantly changing. Actually, I can. She giggled like a cheerleader with a crush, and I readjusted the strap of my duffel bag. Elliot? Mrs. Mason said, touching my arm with a gentle grip. Were you talking about Catherine? I nodded. Mrs. Mason smiled. She's a kind person. I'm glad you see that.
Becca?
Coach scolded. Mrs. Mason frowned up at him. She finally found a friend, and you're worried about your team?
I've always been her friend, I said.
Mrs. Mason looked at me, confused. I've been visiting my aunt in the summers. We've been friends for a while. Oh, she said, her eyes bright. That's so great. Small towns like ours, people get put in a box, and it's hard to get out. But don't listen to anyone. I've gotten to know her better after her father's death. I think Catherine's lovely.
I offered a small smile before heading to my car.
She is.
Youngblood, Coach Peckham called after me. Don't be late again, or I'll run you until you puke.
Yes, sir, I yelled back. Just as I reached the Chrysler, my cell phone rang a warning. That was my dad's ringtone. So I let it go until I was settled in my seat.
Hello? Hey, how's things? Is the football team there worth a damn?
It will be.
I need you to do something for me, he said, emotionless.
I rolled my eyes, knowing he couldn't see me.
Elliot?
Yeah?
You still mowing lawns?
I was. Starting to slow down.
Why?
I didn't have to ask. I already knew what he was going to say.
I was thinking about coming down to see your first game, but gas is way up. If you could spot me the gas money...
I don't have any, I lied.
What do you mean?
He asked, annoyed.
I know you have money saved up from 3 summers ago.
The Chrysler broke down. I had to pay to fix it.
You couldn't do it yourself?
I clenched my teeth.
I don't have any money, Dad.
He sighed.
Guess I won't be making it to your first game.
I'll survive somehow.
I'm sorry to hear that. Damn it, Elliot, that's just lazy. What was wrong with your car?
Something I couldn't fix, I deadpanned.
You getting smart with me?
No, sir, I said, staring at bugs clamoring in the beam of the field lights.
Because I'll come up there, you little shit. I'll come up and whip your ass.
I thought you needed gas money. You could have caught a ride with Mom if you really wanted to watch me play. Guess you'll have to get a job instead of owing your teenage son money.
Yes, sir.
He sighed.
Well, don't screw up. Your mom hated that town, and there's a reason why. They might love you now, but you screw up, and that's all over. You hear me? They'll make you miserable, because they don't give two shits about a redskin kid. They only like that you're making them look good.
Yes, sir.
All right. Talk to you later.
I hung up and gripped my steering wheel, breathing in through my nose and out my mouth, trying to let my hatred simmer instead of boil oil. After a few minutes and some meditation Aunt Lee had taught me, it began to subside. I could hear her calm voice in my head.
He can't touch you, Elliot. You're in control of your emotions. You're in control of your reaction. You can, at any time, change the way you feel.
My hand stopped shaking and my grip relaxed. Once my heart slowed, I reached forward for the ignition and twisted the key. I drove my junk car straight to the Calhoun mansion, parking across the street between street lamps. All the lights inside were dark except for a bedroom upstairs. I waited, hoping she'd somehow see my car and come outside, wishing I could talk to her one more time before I went home. She had forgiven me faster than I thought. Or at least she was beginning to. Still, I couldn't shake the feeling that I was going to have to work a lot harder for her to let me in, literally and figuratively. Whatever she was keeping from me was scaring her, and she'd been left alone to fend for herself too long. I wanted to protect her, but I wasn't sure from what. Just as I reached for the key, a figure stood in front of the only lit window. It was Catherine, looking down the street toward my aunt's house, holding something in her hands. She looked sad, and I was desperate to change that. My cell phone buzzed, displaying a text from Aunt Lee.
"You should be home by now."
"On my way," I typed.
"You don't get to run all over town without permission. You're not 18 just yet."
"I was just trying to calm down before I got home. Dad called."
"Oh, what did he want?"
I smirked. She knew him so well.
"My lawn money."
It took a moment for the three dots to signal she'd begun typing again.
"Uncle John will make sure that doesn't happen again. Come home. We'll talk."
"It's okay. I feel better."
"Come home."
I put the gear shift into drive and pulled away from the curb, heading home. I could see Catherine in the rearview mirror, still standing at her window. I was wondering if she was dreaming about freedom, or glad the glass was separating her from the hateful world outside.
Chapter 11. Catherine. A wooden floor panel creaked just outside my door. When recognition hit, my eyes popped open and I blinked until they adjusted to the darkness. A shadow blocked the hallway light from shining beneath my door, and I waited, wondering who would be standing quietly outside my room in the middle of the night. The knob turned and the latch clicked. The door opened slowly. I lay motionless while footsteps approached my bed, the shadow looming above me growing larger.
"Dear God, Catherine, you look like crap."
"I was sleeping," I grumbled. I sat up, swung my legs over the side of the bed, and rubbed the blurriness from my eyes. I didn't need to see to know my cousin, Imogen, had arrived sometime in the night. She couldn't wait until morning to insult me. "How are you?" I said, staring at my bare feet. I wasn't in the mood to chat, but Imogen would simply annoy me until I paid her attention. They didn't come often, her and Uncle Toad, but they always came in October. She heaved a dramatic sigh, as all tweens did, and let her hands fall to her thighs with a slap.
"I hate it here. I can't wait to leave."
"Already?" I asked.
"It's so hot."
"You should have been here a few weeks ago. It's cooled off since then."
"Not everything is about you, Catherine. God!"
Imogen said, twisting her dark hair around her finger. "Your mom said when she checked us in that you were in a mood." I tried not to snap back. Tolerating Imogen took great patience, and her late-night pop-ins made it difficult. My only cousin always dropped in with Uncle Toad, and I knew when they visited that I would either have to put up with Imogen's incessant complaining and insults, or clean up after her father because he was too lazy to move, but somehow made huge messes everywhere he went. Poppy was younger by several years, but somehow more mature than Imogen and far more pleasant. It was a toss-up whether I'd rather deal with Poppy and her father, Duke, or Imogen and Uncle Toad. My cousin rolled the quilted fabric of my blanket between her fingers, wrinkling her nose.
"This place has really turned into a dump."
"How do you like your room?" I asked. "Would you like me to walk you there?"
"No,"
she said, tapping her toes on the floor.
"Please don't. Don't do that," I said, reaching for her foot as if I could stop her.
Imogen shot me a look and then rolled her eyes.
"Whatever."
I stood,
padding across the floor and down the hall, signaling for Imogen to follow. The sound of her heavy feet against the wood echoed through the old house, and I wondered how she didn't wake the entire neighborhood. "Here," I said, keeping my voice low. I turned the corner, choosing the room next to Duke's, which I knew was clean and ready. Imogen walked past me, frowning in disapproval. "Is this the only one?" "Yes," I lied. We had several rooms open, but I hoped with Imogen sleeping so close to the stairs that led up to Mama's room, she'd stay at her end of the hall. Imogen folded her arms across her chest. "This whole house has turned into a dump. It used to be nice. You used to be nice. Now you're rude. Your mom is weird. I don't even know why we come here." "Me neither." I spoke the words under my breath as I turned away. My feet dragged as I made my way back to my room. I stopped, hearing Imogen step out into the hall. "Catherine?" I turned to face my cousin, seeing the dark circles under her eyes. I prayed she'd fall asleep the moment her head hit the pillow. "Yes, Imogen." She stuck her tongue out, wrinkling her nose to make the ugliest face possible. Her tongue glistened with slobber that gathered at the corners of her mouth. I recoiled, watching the spoiled brat continue her horrid expression until she returned to her room, slamming the door behind her. My shoulders jolted up in reaction to the noise against the quietness of the house. After a few moments, I heard another door, then bare feet padding across the hardwood floor. "Catherine?" Mama asked, looking tired. "Everything all right?" "Fine," I said, returning to my room. I'd pushed my bed until it was flush against the door. The iron feet whined against the floor, creating new scratches in the wood. It had been almost 6 months since the last time I'd had to keep anyone out. The juniper was no longer my home, and not just a bed and breakfast. Mama had created a sanctuary for people who didn't belong in the outside world, and I was trapped there with them. Even though I fantasized about freedom, I wasn't sure my conscience would allow me to leave her. That was hard to explain to anyone, to Elliot, to Mrs. Mason, even to myself. Explaining only meant more questions anyway. I scooped up my jewelry box and listened to it play its tune while I carried it back to my bed, trying to let the music lull me back to sleep. I pressed my head into the pillow, stretching to get comfortable and reacquainted with my mattress. I heard a creak outside my door and peered down to see another shadow, partially blocking the hallway light at the bottom of my door. I waited. Imogen was mouthy, but she didn't push confrontation. She was angry. I wondered if the person outside was Uncle Toad or worse, Duke. I braced myself for the pounding on the door, the grunt from Uncle Toad, or the threats from Duke. Instead, the shadow moved, and the footsteps sounded farther from my room with each step. I took a deep breath and exhaled, willing my heart to stop ramming against my rib cage and the adrenaline to soak back into my system so I could get some rest before school.
"Whoa, you okay?"
Elliot asked, leaning against the closed locker next to mine. He readjusted the small red backpack hanging from his shoulder. I shoved my geometry textbook between my AP Chemistry and Spanish 2 books, almost too tired to stand. Forming a sentence threatened to crash my whole system.
"Do you have plans for lunch?" he asked. "I have an extra PB&J and a passenger seat that leans almost all the way back."
I shot him a death glare.
"To nap," he said quickly.
He surprised me when his bronzed cheeks flushed a hint of red.
"Just eat and nap. We don't even have to talk. What do you think?"
I nodded, feeling close to tears. Elliot gestured for me to follow him, taking my backpack off my shoulders and walking slow to keep pace with me all the way down the hall until we reached the double doors that led to the parking lot. He pushed, allowing me to walk past him. I squinted from the sunlight, holding up my hand to shield my eyes and hopefully stave off the headache that had threatened to worsen all day. Elliot unlocked the door and opened it wide, waiting until I was seated to show me where the lever was to adjust the angle. As soon as the door shut, I was nearly horizontal, pushing myself back until I was flat and the seat back hit the bench behind me. The driver's side door opened and Elliot slid in beside me. He pulled two cellophane-wrapped sandwiches out of a brown paper sack and handed me one.
"Thank you," I managed, clumsily pulling at the clear edges.
Once the bread was exposed, I shoved a fourth of the sandwich in my mouth, chewing quickly before taking three more bites until it was gone. I closed my eyes without saying anything else, feeling myself drift off. In what seemed like just a few minutes later, Elliot gently poked me.
"Catherine, I'm sorry. I don't want you to be late."
"Hmm?" I asked, my eyes fluttering. I sat up and wiped my eyes. "How long have I been asleep?"
"Pretty much the whole half hour. You slept like a rock. Didn't move once."
I gripped the strap of my nylon backpack and stepped outside. Several of our classmates were turning to do a double take, one small group walking arm in arm between giggles and whispers.
"Aw, how sweet," Ninka said. "They still have the same haircut."
Her red hair flipped over her shoulder as she turned to stare. She nudged Owen with her elbow and glanced at us once, looking disgusted before pulling him toward the door.
"Ignore them," Elliot said.
"I do."
We continued across the parking lot toward the school building. The double metal doors were painted red, and a silver bar across instead of handles practically screamed, "Stay away." Immediately the rumors would begin. Presley would have a new reason to heckle me, and now it would happen to Elliot, too. He pushed on the silver bar, and it made a loud knocking sound. He gestured for me to go first, so I did.
"Hey," Elliot said, touching my arm. "I'm worried about you. Everything okay? Didn't you used to be really close with Minka and Owen?"
"I stopped talking to them after."
Connor Daniels slapped Elliot hard on the backside. Elliot clenched his teeth and pressed his lips together in a hard line.
"Scrimmage tonight, young blood! It's on!"
Elliot pointed at him.
"We are the Mudcats! The mighty, mighty Mudcats!"
Connor yelled back, doing his best Heisman pose. Elliot chuckled and shook his head, then sobered when he saw the look on my face.
"I'm sorry. You were telling me about Minka and Owen?"
"You're friends with Connor Daniels?" He raised an eyebrow.
"I mean, I guess. He's on the team."
"Oh."
"Oh, what?"
he asked, nudging me with his elbow as we continued walking.
"I just didn't know that you..."
"Youngblood!"
another team member called out. Elliot nodded and then looked down at me.
"That I what?"
"We're friends with those people."
"Those people?"
"You know what I mean," I said, continuing to my locker. "He's friends with Scotty, who's friends with Presley. And didn't you take Scotty's place as senior quarterback? Why don't they hate you?"
He shrugged.
"They like winning, I guess. I'm good, Catherine. I mean..."
He looked like he was about to backpedal, but then decided against it.
"Yeah, I'll say it. I'm pretty good. I've been named as one of the top quarterbacks in state."
We continued walking.
"Wow, that's great, Elliot."
He nudged me. "Don't sound so impressed."
Teammates randomly yelling his last name happened half a dozen more times before I stopped in front of the row of maroon lockers. I stopped at number 347 and twisted the black dial, entering my combination, and pulled. I growled. The door stuck like it always did. Elliot watched me try it again and then stood behind me. I could feel the warmth of his skin through his shirt and mine. His arm slid over my shoulder, settled on the handle, and yanked hard. The lock released, and the door cracked open. He leaned down to whisper in my ear, "Mine sticks, too. Just have to be persistent." "You are that." I was aware of my every muscle, every movement, my posture. Everything felt awkward as I removed books from my backpack and replaced them in my locker before hanging my pack on the hook. I had to stand on the balls of my feet, but I could reach. "What's with the little red bag?"
"Oh," he said, looking down. "It's my camera. It's inconspicuous."
"Thank goodness I can keep a secret," I said with a grin. Elliot stared at me, amused.
"You should come to the scrimmage."
"Tonight? No," I said, shaking my head.
"Why?"
I thought about that for a moment, too embarrassed to answer. I wouldn't have anyone to sit with. I wouldn't know where to sit. Was there a student section? Did it cost to get in? I was angry at myself for being such a coward. I'd faced scarier things than an uncomfortable social situation.
"Please come," he said,
watching me from under his brow. I chewed on my lip while I mulled over why I would or wouldn't. Elliot waited patiently, as if the bell wouldn't ring any second. "I'll think about it," I said finally. The bell rang, and Elliot barely noticed.
"Yeah?"
I nodded and then pushed him gently. "You should get to class." He walked backward a few steps, grinning like an idiot.
"You first."
I gathered my things and shut my locker, letting my gaze linger on him for a few more seconds before turning toward my next class. I didn't make eye contact with Mr. Simons while I took my seat. He stopped speaking for a few seconds, but chose not to single me out, and I quietly slid into my chair, relieved. Mr. Simons was as animated as ever about physiology, but my thoughts were being pulled back and forth between going to the scrimmage like a regular high school student or going home like I knew I should. I didn't know who'd checked in, if anyone, and lists began to form in my mind, scrolling through what I'd planned to do after school and if it could wait or not. Laundry, scrubbing tubs, dinner. What if I went to the scrimmage and Poppy was at the Juniper alone? Or worse, what if Imogen was still there, pouting and angry when I returned for not coming home at a predictable time? Uncle Toad would inevitably make an appearance. Imogen's arrival assured that. I closed my eyes, imagining my uncle's temper flaring or Poppy's father angry that I was late. The longer I thought about it, the more deflated I felt. The cons far outweighed the pros. The bell rang, startling me. I trudged back to my locker. Before I could open it, a familiar bronze arm slid over my shoulder and yanked up on the handle. I tried not to smile, but when I looked up at Elliot, his contagious grin from before hadn't faded.
"Have you thought about it?"
"What time does the game start?" I asked.
"Pretty much right after school."
He held out a set of keys.
"If you need to run home, you can take my car. Just bring it back. I won't have the energy to walk home."
I shook my head. "I don't have my license." He wrinkled his nose.
"Seriously?"
"Dad never got around to it before he... I never learned." He nodded once.
"Good to know. We can get to work on that. So, scrimmage."
I looked down. "I'm sorry, I can't." Mr. Mason was checking his phone, the pits of his ratty white shirt stained with sweat. He wiped his brow with a handkerchief.
"Dear God, will it ever cool off?"
"It doesn't cool off in hell, Mr. Mason," Minka grumbled. The rest of the chairs filled, the bell rang, and Mr. Mason had just pushed off his desk to stand when Mrs. Mason walked in. She immediately noticed Elliot. "I thought I requested a table for Mr. Youngblood." Mr. Mason blinked and then eyed Elliot.
"It's in the back."
Scotty was sitting at Elliot's table.
All right, you two. This isn't musical chairs. Get back to your spots.
Elliot sighed and then struggled to free himself of the small wooden chair and attached to desk while everyone chuckled. Everyone but me and the Masons. Mr. Mason looked up at his estranged wife, waiting for some sign of her satisfaction. She was caught off guard. For once, it wasn't Mr. Mason's fault. I watched him sit a bit taller, that small victory enough to make him feel more like a man than he had in probably a long time.
"What do you need, Becca?"
he said, firm. "I need Catherine." I sank low in my seat, already feeling 20 pairs of eyes on the back of my head. Mr. Mason scanned the room and his gaze landed on me, as if he didn't know exactly where I sat, and then he jerked his head toward the door. I nodded, gathered my supplies, and followed Mrs. Mason to the office. She sat behind her desk and clasped her hands together, still a bit shaken from losing the upper hand.
"You okay?" I asked.
She smiled, breathing a small laugh out of her nose.
"I'm supposed to be asking you that."
I waited, and she conceded.
"Yes, I'm okay. I guess I'm not used to being wrong, Catherine. I'm slipping."
"Maybe you're not perfect. Maybe that's okay." She narrowed her eyes at me, a playful scowl on her face.
"Who's the counselor here?"
I smiled.
"You know what I'm going to ask," she said, sitting back in her chair. "Why don't you just talk?"
I shrugged. "Things are better." She sat up.
"Better?"
"Elliot."
"Elliot?"
She was clearly trying to keep the hope she was feeling a secret and failing horribly. I nodded, frowning as I stared at the floor.
"Sort of. I'm trying not to."
"Why?"
"Because you prefer to keep to yourself, or because he's pressuring you to be more than friends?"
My nose wrinkled. "It's nothing like that. I'm just still angry." She bristled like my dad used to when I'd talk about Presley.
"What did he do?"
"He used to stay with his aunt during the summers. Then he had to go home. It was the day he... She nodded, and I was thankful she didn't need me to say the words.
"And?"
"He promised he'd come back, but he didn't. Then he tried when he got his license, but he got caught. Now his parents are getting a divorce, and he's here."
"That's quite a story. So you're starting to realize that maybe it wasn't his fault? He seems like a nice guy. And you said he tried to come back?"
I nodded, trying not to smile as I envisioned him sneaking out in the middle of the night and jumping in his rickety car, racing down the highway at 45 miles an hour.
"He tried."
"Mrs. Mason?"
"Yes?"
"Back when you were my age, did you go to football games?" She smiled at the instant memories filling her mind.
"Every one of them. Mr. Mason played football."
"Did you have a job?"
"Yes, but they understood that I was a kid. You can't get these years back, Catherine."
I thought about her words. High school wasn't my favorite, but I couldn't go back and do it over.
"Have you been to a game?"
she asked, snapping me back to reality. She knew the answer by the look on my face.
"Never? Oh, you should go, Catherine. They're so much fun.
What makes you nervous about going?" I hesitated, but Mrs. Mason's office had always been a safe place.
"I have chores at home."
"Can they wait? Maybe if you talk to your mom about it." I shook my head, and she nodded in understanding.
"Catherine, are you safe at home?"
"Yes, she doesn't hit me. Never has."
"Good. I believe you."
"If that changes, it won't."
"I don't want you to get into trouble. I can't advise you to do anything against your mother's wishes. I think you should ask permission, but a night off is not unreasonable. As a minor, it's required."
"Anything else?" She noticed my unease.
Come on. You know you can talk to me. Do you want me to do my top 10 most embarrassing moments of high school again? A laugh erupted from my throat. No, no, I won't make you do that. Okay, then. Share. After a few seconds, I vomited the truth. I'll have to sit by myself. I'm going. Sit with me. I made a face, and she conceded. All right, all right. I'm not the coolest, but I'm a person to sit next to. Lots of students sit with their parents. I eyed her, and she backpedaled. Okay, some of them do. For a second. Just sit with me until you're comfortable. We can get a cherry limeade on the way home, and I can drop you off. That's very nice of you, but Elliot said he'd take me home. We're practically neighbors. She clapped her hands together once. Then it's settled. First football game! Woo! Her reaction might have made another student roll her eyes, but I hadn't experienced that kind of celebrating since before Dad died. I offered her an awkward smile and then glanced over my shoulder at the clock. Maybe I should... Yes, we'll talk again next month, if that's okay. I'm impressed with your progress, Catherine. I'm excited for you. Thanks, I said, pushing in my chair. The bell rang, so I went straight to my locker, placing my hand on the black dial, pausing for a second to remember the combination. 2:44:16, Elliot said behind me. I narrowed my eyes. That's none of your business.
I'm sorry. I'll forget it. So, you coming?
I sighed. Why? Why do you want me to come so badly?
I just do. I want you to see us win. I want you to be there when I run off the field. I want to see you waiting by my car when I come out, my hair wet, still out of breath, high on adrenaline. I want you to be a part of it.
Oh, I said, overwhelmed by his admission.
Too much?
He chuckled, amused by my reaction. Okay, let's go.
Really?
Yes, let's hurry before I change my mind. I put all my books away except one and stuffed it in my bag, slinging one strap over my shoulder as I turned. Elliot was holding out his hand, waiting for me to take it. I glanced around, searching for curious eyes.
Don't look at them. Look at me,
he said, still extending his hand. I took it, and he led me down the hall, out the double doors and across the parking lot. We put our bags in his car and continued to the football field, my hand still in his. Chapter 12. Catherine. Elliot received the ball from Scotty, took a few steps back, and shot the football in a perfect spiral to Connor. Connor sailed in the air, higher than I thought a human was capable of jumping, clearing the outstretched arms of two players from the other team. He clutched the ball to his chest, falling hard to the ground. The referees blew their whistles, lifting their hands in the air, and the crowd jumped to their feet, cheering so loudly I had to hold my hands over my ears. Mrs. Mason grabbed my arms, bouncing up and down like a giddy high school student.
We won! They did it!
The scoreboard read 44-45, and the Mudcats, sweaty and a little beat up, stood shoulder to shoulder, their arms around each other, swaying side to side while the band played our school song. Mrs. Mason began singing and hooked her arm around me. The rest of the crowd was doing the same, swaying and smiling.
O-C-H-S!
The crowd sang, and then everyone broke into applause. The Mudcats broke formation and began jogging to the locker room, helmets in hand. All but Elliot. He was looking for someone in the stands. His teammates were encouraging him to follow them off the field, but he ignored them. Is he looking for you? Mrs. Mason asked. No, I said, shaking my head.
Catherine!
Elliot yelled. I stepped out into the stairway from the bleacher I was sitting on.
Catherine Calhoun!
Elliot yelled again, this time holding his free hand against the side of his mouth. Some people in line for the exit stairs looked up. The cheerleaders turned, and then the students in a narrow line between Elliot and me stopped cheering and chatting to look up. I ran down the steps, waving at him until he saw me. Coach Peckham touched Elliot's arm and tugged, but Elliot kept his feet stationary, not moving until he recognized me in the crowd and waved back. I imagined those behind me were wondering what Elliot saw in me that they didn't. But in the moment that Elliot's gaze met mine, none of that mattered. We might as well have been sitting on the edge of Deep Creek, picking at the ground and pretending we weren't desperate to hold hands instead of grass. And in that moment, the pain and anger I'd held on to instead disappeared. Elliot jogged off the field with his coach, who patted him on the backside once before they disappeared around the corner. The crowd was dispersing, filing down the stairways and pushing past me. Mrs. Mason finally made her way to me and hooked her arm around mine. "What a great game! Worth taking a night off. Elliot's taking you home?" I nodded. "You're sure?" "I'm sure. I'm supposed to wait by his car. My backpack's in there, so..." "Sounds like a plan. I'll see you tomorrow." She stopped abruptly, letting me pass her so she could turn left toward the side street that ran along the stadium. Coach Peckham met her at the corner, and they continued on together. I raised an eyebrow and then began navigating the maze of cars between the stadium entrance and Elliot's car. I reached his Chrysler and leaned my backside against the rusting metal just above his front driver's side tire. My classmates returned to their cars, animated about the game and the inevitable party that would follow. The girls pretended they weren't impressed with the boys' ridiculous antics to get their attention. I swallowed when I saw Presley's white Mini Cooper two cars away and then heard her shrill laughter. She paused. Anna Sue, Bree, Tara, and Tatum just behind her. "Oh, my God," she said, her hand to her chest. "Are you waiting for Elliot? Is he, like, your boyfriend?" "No," I said, embarrassed a second time by the trembling in my voice. I hated the way the slightest confrontation affected me. "So you're just waiting for him, like a puppy? Oh, my God," Anna Sue said, covering her mouth with her hand. "We're friends," I said. "You don't have friends," Presley snarled. Elliot jogged up, still wet from his shower, and wrapped his arms around me, twirling me in a circle. I held him tight, as if letting go would let in all the hurt and darkness surrounding us. He leaned down and planted a kiss on my mouth, so quick I didn't realize what had happened until it was over. I blinked, knowing Presley and the clones were gawking at us.
"Let's go celebrate," Elliot said with a toothy grin.
"Are you going to the party, Elliot?" Bree asked, nervously twirling her hair between her fingers. He glanced over at them, seeming to just notice they were there.
"The bonfire? Nah, I'm taking my girl out."
He knew I wouldn't argue in front of an audience, especially not Presley.
"Oh, really?"
Presley snapped, finally finding her voice. She smirked at Bree before speaking again.
"Kit Kat just said you weren't her boyfriend."
He lifted my hand to his lips and gave it a peck, winking at me.
"Her name is Catherine, and not yet. I'm having a good night, though. I think I just might talk her into it."
Presley rolled her eyes.
"Gross!
Come on," she said, herding her friends to her car.
"Ready?"
he asked, opening his door. I got behind the wheel and scooted to the middle. Elliot sat next to me, but before I could move again, he touched my knee.
"Just sit here, would you?"
"In the middle?" He nodded, hope in his eyes. I exhaled, feeling awkward and comfortable at the same time. Elliot made me feel safe in a way I hadn't since the day he'd left, like I wasn't trying to survive alone. He backed out of the parking space and drove toward the lot's exit, taking off like a rocket down the road to the stop sign, and then again down Main Street. Other members of the team honked at us in excess as they passed, some of their passengers hanging out the window to wave or lift their shirts or other nonsense. We passed Walmart, where there was a concentration of vehicles parked and high schoolers standing outside in the parking lot, yelling, dancing, and whatever else to stand out. When they recognized Elliot's Chrysler, they yelled and honked, trying to get him to pull over.
"You can take me home and go back," I offered.
He shook his head slowly.
"No way."
"I should get home, though."
"No problem. We'll go through the drive-through and you'll be home in 10. Deal?"
The Chrysler worked hard to reach 40 miles per hour on the street that led to Brahms. Elliot pulled into the drive-through, ordered 2 cones and 2 cherry limeades, and then pulled forward.
"Thank you," I said. "I'll pay you back."
"No, you won't. My treat."
"Thanks for the ride home, too, and inviting me to the game. It was fun to watch."
"Fun to watch me?"
"That was fun, too," I said, my cheeks flushing. When we received our cones, Elliot lifted his to toast.
"To the Mudcats."
"And their quarterback," I said, touching my ice cream gently to his. Elliot beamed, most of the ice cream top disappearing in his mouth. He kept his cherry limeade between his thighs while he drove me home, using one hand to steer and the other to hold his ice cream. He talked about the different football plays, why they worked, why they didn't, the trash talk, and as he pulled next to the curb in front of my house, he sighed with contentment.
"I'm gonna miss football."
"You won't play in college?"
He shook his head.
"Nah. I'd need a scholarship, and I'm not that good."
"You said you're considered one of the best in the state."
He thought about that.
"Yeah."
"So you're good, Elliot. A scholarship is possible. Give yourself some credit."
He shrugged, blinking.
"Wow. I hadn't let myself believe it, I guess. Maybe I can go to college."
"You can."
"You think so?"
I nodded once. "I do."
"Mom and Aunt Lee want me to go. I don't know. I'm sort of tired of school. I have things I want to do, places I want to see."
"You could take a gap year to travel. That would be fun. Except my dad used to say that most people who take a gap year never end up enrolling in college, and that might mess with any scholarships."
He turned in his seat, his face just inches from mine. The seats were scratchy and smelled musty, mixing with Elliot's sweat and freshly applied deodorant. He seemed nervous, making me nervous.
"I'm good for you,"
he said finally.
I know you might not trust me yet, but..."
"Elliot," I blurted out. I sighed. "I lost 2 people I cared about most in the same day. He died, and I was alone. With her. And you just left me here to drown. It's not about trust."
I pressed my lips together.
"You broke my heart. Even if we could find our way back to the way it used to be, that girl you knew, she's gone."
He shook his head, his eyes glossing over.
"You have to know I wouldn't leave like that by choice. Mom threatened to never let me come back again. She saw how I felt about you. She knew there was nowhere else I'd rather be, and she was right."
My eyebrows pulled together.
"Why? Why do you like me so much? You have all those friends, most of whom don't like me, by the way. You don't need me."
He gazed at me for several long seconds, seeming in awe.
"I fell in love with you that summer, Catherine. I've loved you ever since."
It took me several seconds to respond.
"I'm not that girl anymore, Elliot."
"Yeah, you are. I can still see her."
"That was a long time ago."
He shrugged, unapologetic.
"You never get over your first love."
I struggled for words, finding none. His eyebrows pulled together, desperation in his eyes.
"Will you give me another chance?" "Catherine."
Please, he pleaded. I promise I'll never leave you like that again. I swear on my life. I'm not 15 anymore. I make my own choices now, and I hope to God you choose to forgive me. I don't know what I'll do if you don't.
I looked over my shoulder at the juniper. The windows were dark. The house was sleeping. I believe you, I said, looking at him. Before his smile grew wider, I inserted a quick disclaimer. My mama's been worse since Dad died. I have to help her run the bed and breakfast. I barely have time for myself. He smiled.
I'll take what I can get.
I mirrored his expression, but then it fell away. You can't come in, and you can't ask questions. His eyebrows furrowed.
Why?
That's a question. I like you, and I'd like to try, but I can't talk about Mama, and you can't come inside.
Catherine,
he said, sliding his fingers between mine.
Does she hurt you? Does anyone who stays there hurt you?
I shook my head. No, she's just a very private person.
Will you tell me if that changes?
He asked, squeezing my hand. I nodded. Yes. He steadied himself and then cupped my cheeks, leaning in and closing his eyes. I wasn't sure what to do, so I closed my eyes, too. His lips touched mine, soft and full. He kissed me once and pulled away, smiling before leaning in again, this time letting his mouth part. I tried to mirror what he did, both panicking and melting against him. He held me while his tongue slipped inside and touched mine, wet and warm. Once the dance inside our mouths found a rhythm, I wrapped my arms around his neck and leaned closer, begging him to hold me tighter. I would walk into the juniper soon, and I wanted the safety I felt with Elliot to encompass me for as long as I could have it. Just when my lungs screamed for air, Elliot pulled away, touching his forehead to mine.
Finally, he whispered, the word barely audible.
His next words weren't much louder.
I'll be on the porch swing at 9. I'll bring some huckleberry bread for breakfast.
What's that?
My great-grandma's recipe. Pretty sure it's older than that. Aunt Lee promised she'd make some tonight. It's amazing. You're gonna love it.
I'll bring the OJ. Elliot leaned over to give me one more kiss on the cheek before reaching for the handle. He had to yank twice, but then it opened. I stepped out onto the sidewalk in front of the juniper. It was still dark. I let out a sigh.
Catherine, I know you said I can't come in. Can I at least walk you to the door?
Good night. I pushed through the gate, walked over the cracks in the sidewalk, and listened for sounds inside the house before opening the door. Crickets chirped, and once I reached the door, Elliot's car pulled away, but there was no movement from the juniper. I twisted the knob and pushed, looking up. The door at the top of the stairway was open, my bedroom, and I tried not to let the heaviness in my chest overwhelm me. I always kept my door shut. Someone had been looking for me. With shaking hands, I set my backpack on a dining chair. The table was still covered in dirty dishes, and the sink was full, too. Broken shards of glass were next to the island. I hurried to search the cabinet beneath the sink to get Mama's thick rubber gloves and then fetched the broom and dustpan. The glass scraped on the floor as it swept across the tile. The moonlight peeked through the dining room window, making the smaller shards sparkle even as they were mixed in with dust and hair. A loud burp came from the living room, and I froze. Even though I had an idea of who it was, I waited for him to make his presence known.
Selfish,
he slurred. I stood, emptied the pan into the trash, and then took off the gloves, stashing them back under the sink. In no hurry, I took careful steps out of the dining room, crossing the hall into the living room, where Uncle Toad sat in a recliner. His belly was hanging over his pants, barely hidden by a thin, stained t-shirt. He held a bottle of beer in his hand, a collection of empty ones sitting next to him. He'd already vomited once, the evidence left on the floor and splattered on the empty bottles. I covered my mouth, revolted by the smell. He burped again. "Oh, please," I said, running to the kitchen for a bucket. I returned, placing it on the floor next to the puddle of vomit, and pulled the towel I'd grabbed on the way from my back pocket.
"Use the bucket, Uncle Toad."
"You just think you can come and go? Selfish," he said again, looking away, disgusted.
I dabbed his chest, wiping away the drool and vomit from his neck and shirt. He hadn't leaned over in time even once.
"You should go upstairs and shower," I said, gagging.
Quicker than I'd ever seen him move, he lunged forward, grabbing my shirt and stopping just inches from my face. I could smell the sourness on his breath when he spoke.
"You do your responsibilities before you go telling me what to do, girl."
Sorry. I should have come home to help Mama. "Mama?" I called, trembling. Uncle Toad sucked bits of dinner from his teeth and then released me, falling back against the chair. I stood, taking a step back. Then I dropped the rag and ran up the stairs to my room, closing the door behind me. The wood felt cold on my back, and I raised my hands to cover my eyes. A few short breaths came and went uncontrollably as my eyes welled up with tears that fell down my cheeks. When things outside were getting better, the inside was getting worse. My hand smelled like vomit, and I held it away, disgusted. Hurrying into the bathroom, I scrambled for the soap and scrubbed my hands until they began to feel raw, and then my face. A creak on the stairs froze my body in place for a moment. Once the adrenaline melted away, I clumsily yanked on the faucet knobs until the water stopped before rushing to my bed to push it against the door. The stairs creaked again, prompting me to back away and stand against the far wall, trying to stop my entire body from shaking as I stared at the door. I stood silent, waiting in the dark for Uncle Toad to pass by or try to force his way in. He climbed another step, and then another, until he finally reached the top. Uncle Toad waddled when he walked, carrying the 400 pounds he bragged about weighing. He wheezed a few times, and then I heard him burp again before tromping down the hall to his room. I pulled my knees to my chest, closed my eyes, and fell over onto my side, not knowing if he would come back or if someone else would end up knocking on my door. I'd never wanted to see Mama so much in my life, but she didn't want to see me. The juniper was a mess. She was probably overwhelmed and holed up wherever she went when things were too hard. I wanted to call for Mama, but wasn't sure who would hear me. I fantasized that Althea would be in the kitchen in the morning, cooking and cleaning, greeting me with a smile on her face. That was the only thing that could calm me down long enough to fall asleep. That, and knowing tomorrow was Saturday, driving lessons. I had an entire day with Elliot, safe from the juniper and everyone in it. Chapter 13. Catherine. At first, the voices seemed like part of a dream I couldn't remember, but as they got louder, I sat up in bed, rubbing my eyes as the voices argued in hushed anger like my parents used to do. They were all there, the guests, some panicked, some angry, some trying to regain order. I pushed off my mattress and padded across the room, turning the doorknob slowly, trying not to alert anyone that I was awake. Once the door cracked open, I listened. The voices were still chattering excitedly, even Uncle Toad and Cousin Imogen. I stepped out into the hallway, the cold floor burning my bare feet. The closer I came to the room where the guests had all gathered,
the clearer the voices became.
I'm not hearing this, Althea said. I said no, and I mean no. We are not doing that to that poor baby.